Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Callie Crossley is filling in for the vacationing Jim Browdy. The guy across from me doesn't think I remember him from the Halloween fairs at the schools where I remember you, Jonathan Alsop. You may not remember me. Anyway, Jonathan Alsop is the owner of the Boston Wine School, and today he's going to join us to tell us about the best wines to celebrate the 4th of July. Thank you very much. Now, I want to tell everybody who's going to be, people are going to be writing furiously. This is all going to be posted on our website so you can get all this. Yeah, if you don't get it, if you're driving, you can't pull over and write down all these great suggestions. Where's my pen so I can write them down?
So yeah, don't try to remember anything. That has never worked.
You know, I want to be a cool person that serves the correct wine. But you know something? Let me just, before you tell us about 4th of July wines,
sure.
I want to tell you something. Yeah. You did tell me something, and I didn't even know you're the same guy that went to the same school as my kid. You told me a long time ago, I think it was on Callie's show, about the $2.99 cheap Chardonnay at Trader Joe's.
Yes, the Charles Shaw, the two-buck chuck.
You are a genius. It is delicious.
I am?
Yes. You know why? Because
hey, you know, I don't make that wine. I mean, just for the record.
But I just want to point that out. If you are someone like me who has a half a glass of wine with dinner, I can't have any more because I'll fall asleep. But you have a half a glass of wine, you don't want, and the wine sits in your refrigerator for 6 days.
Right.
And you want a cheap wine, yes. Right? But it's a drinkable cheap wine.
Great. Especially the Chardonnay has been great. The other wines,
not so good.
Yeah. Well, the red wines, I can't really exact. I can tell they're different, but you know they're all kind of like indistinguishable red wine. But somehow this Charles Shaw Chardonnay, I mean, they don't need any, you know, they don't need any publicity,
any
but you know,
not everyone may know
this. That Chardonnay has just
two
been
buck chuck
a real
is pretty well known.
Yeah. $2.99. Yeah. It is. It's a buy.
Yeah.
So what about 4th of July?
First of all, we're looking at barbecue wines. And by barbecue, I don't mean, you know, real barbecue. I mean like, you know, grill barbecue.
Yes, that's right. Be
correct. Hot dogs, hamburgers, that kind of thing.
Grilled foods.
You know, one thing that, and I brought something for us to taste here, actually.
This is a little
counterintuitive for people, because what I brought is a slightly sweet Riesling.
I love Riesling.
Which goes great with smoky foods, grilled food. That slightly sweet Riesling thing and the smoke of the grill makes a fantastic combination.
Shall
more
I open
spice.
Shall I open this, ladies?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Please.
He's got little
this
cups
is,
and everything.
This is a German Riesling. It's the Dragonstone Riesling.
Okay, I'm writing that
down. And it's named for an almost completely intact pterodactyl fossil that was excavated on the vineyard. So in German, it's called Drachenstein, which means exactly the same thing, dragon stone. When they excavated this thing, of course, they understood it to be a dragon, and that's where the vineyard gets its name from. And I think you're going to be able to taste a little pterodactyl
in
here. A lot of people are using that synthetic pterodactyl, but this is the real
deal.
This is the real thing.
Okay,
so
that's very exciting.
We should know that Riesling is also very good with spicy foods, too. So a spicy barbecue sauce, real barbecue,
would be good.
Yeah.
It's got a little bit of sweetness to it. Okay, thank you very much, Jonathan.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah,
am I supposed to stir my cup, is that an affectation that you sometimes see at snazzy restaurants?
It is a gigantic affectation.
Oh, good.
We teach it and do it at the wine school. Mm-hmm. But for now, you know, we're just enjoying life here. So just taste this and enjoy it.
This is great.
Right? And sweet, but also zippy at the same time. You know, it's got, in the wine world, we talk about this thing called, you know, balance in a wine. We say, this wine's really balanced. This is between $15 and $20
a bottle.
That's not
too
bad. No.
Jonathan always has very reasonable wine picks.
Marjorie, as you pointed out, we live in a golden age of cheap wine. So
why do we live in a golden age of cheap wine?
Well, part of it's technology. Part of it is, you know, our ability to understand now where to plant what. I'm going to be visiting my mom in South Carolina at the end of this week. And on my way back, I'm going to visit a couple of wineries in North Carolina.
I did not even know there were wineries.
Every state in the country has wineries.
North Carolina has 75 plus, and we're talking wineries, not vineyards that grow grapes that maybe don't make wine. 75 plus wineries in North Carolina. Virginia is huge. Kentucky has 65.
Virginia's a rival to California.
Kentucky, in which two-thirds of the counties are
Look
in some
you.
Way are in some way
knows
dry,
everything over there.
Has 65 vineyards and wineries. Yeah. It's just
what about Massachusetts?
The South is going to be dozens.
Yeah.
The South is going to be huge as we start to understand what to plant where. And what likes to grow where. And, you know, we're understanding that much, much, much better. So it's less of a crapshoot where you plant, you know, a few rows of everything and then see what dies. I mean, today we understand what to lead with and what to plant. And so that's part of it. I mean, we're growing more vines, making more wine, getting more grapes, getting more wine out of each acre.
So where should we go in Massachusetts?
Well, there's a ton of places in Massachusetts. I mean, if you're going out to the end of the Cape, out towards Provincetown, there's Truro.
Fabulous wine.
Truro Vineyards, really good wine, really super committed to quality. I mean, they grow a lot of their own grapes, but they also have relationships with other vineyards and wineries that grow grapes. Westport Rivers.
Oh, I knew about that.
Which
them.
Is down.
Delicious.
Yeah,
yes.
Which great sparkling wine.
Delicious
also,
sparkling.
Also great Riesling. They're down, you know, as you're headed towards a Horseneck Beach.
That's
on
right.
88.
I'm getting far afield, though. I'm getting far afield here. I'm getting carried away. We're supposed to be talking about 4th of July wines.
But I think what you're getting at...
What am I getting at?
Well, is that, you know, the story of wine is the story of people saying, you know, name the place, it'll never happen. Oregon? Never happen. Washington?
Great wines.
Never happen. Well, you know, when I was a boy... People would say things like, well, California, you know, they make some alcoholic beverages from grapes, but, you know, it's never really
real
going to be really the thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the ancient Romans said this about southern France. They said, France, are you insane? It's going to take 1,000 years. And, you know, it did. But, you know, this is the story. So when we hear North Carolina, when we hear Virginia, when we hear Kentucky, when we hear Massachusetts or Rhode Island or...
I just came back from New Mexico.
The
most well-respected sparklings in the country made there.
Yeah.
Always on wine lists.
Yeah.
And those people, the original family, refused to go to California. The climate wasn't right for sparkling.
Yeah.
They let's get back to the reason what we're supposed to be talking about.
Freedom of wine.
That 4th of July wine. So we have one, the Dragonstone Riesling.
Yep. Another thing I like about this is it's only 10.5% alcohol. So compared with like a 13 or 14% alcohol wine, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's a big difference, but we're talking 25% less alcohol.
Right, so you can drink more before you disgrace yourself.
Right. Yeah, or you can not disgrace yourself.
Right.
Which, you know, is kind of a strategy we're always trying to... always trying unsuccessfully to pursue.
That is true. So any other...
So I like that it's a little lower alcohol.
Yep.
So in terms of a red wine, I mean, you know... Callie, you're a huge fan of the Pinot Noir.
I love it. Just had a fabulous one.
Which one?
Starts with an L, Envision Sore or something, Flusivore or something.
Okay.
It was fabulous.
Okay. So Pinotage, a grape from South Africa, very smoky, very funky, very earthy, you know, a really strong red wine
that can stand up
to strong red meat and smoke. One that I had recently that I really liked is called Barista.
Yeah, that
have
was
you
good one.
Have you had this one?
Yes,
Barista Pinotage.
After the Starbucks people?
Well, you
I
know,
don't think so. But.
they named it for the fact that it has kind of a you could call it coffee in terms of what it smells like. Mm-hmm. It has kind of a roasted, you know, all of this smoky, funky. You know, it has kind of a roasted grain flavor. So that's why they called it Barista. Great Pinotage. I think it's about $15.
Always inexpensive.
Yeah.
Always.
So those are great. You know, those, you know, strong red, you know, big red food goes with big red wine. And that's how we figure that out.
And how do you know if you're having a barbecue and lots of us are with the burgers and the hot dogs? When you go into the liquor store, how do you know, or the wine store, how to find the big red wine?
Yeah, well, you know,
because lots of times I feel like they don't know either, and they're just telling me things.
Well, you know, there might be a little bit of that going on. I mean, one of the things that is hard for us to do, because we don't really, as Americans, grow up with this kind of wine culture, is to be able to go into a wine shop and say, look, I'm having big red meat. I want big red wine. What have you got that's really, you know, and have this conversation. Don't talk about wine. Talk about you. You know, here's what I like. Here's what I drink. Here's what I'm eating. Here are the people who are coming. Here's what their personalities are like. I know this is very counterintuitive, but you know, the secret of wine is that it's not about the wine.
It's about the experience.
The experience, the people, the food, the circumstance, why you're all there. I mean, you know, is it your favorite grand uncle's wake, or did somebody get a promotion? You know, what's the emotional quality of how you're going to be drinking and enjoying this wine? A lot of people can't talk about wine because the language is so imprecise and freaky, but people can talk about themselves and food and what's going on, and that's what we help people learn how to do at the wine school.
But, you know, it is funny, as someone like myself who obviously doesn't know anything about wine. You will go to – I remember going to a friend's house. Actually, I probably can say this on the air. Cheryl Julian writes for the Boston Globe. Her husband is a wine expert.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I was going to a dinner party that she was going to be at, and I felt, well, I got to get some wine. And I thought – I better get some good wine because he's a wine. I don't want to bring some. I'm not going to bring the $2 Chardonnay from Trader Joe's.
So he's probably had it.
But why not?
Because why not? Was intimidated. I didn't want to seem like a rube. You know what I mean? So I go to this liquor store in Brookline on Harvard Street. Looks like an upscale place. And I ask him, I said, I was going to really splurge. I was going to spend like $30 for a bottle of wine. And I got to tell you, this wine was awful. It was awful. It was awful. I thought, did they take advantage of me at the liquor store, or did they?
You know what? Here is one of the problems with spending a lot of money on a bottle of wine.
What?
You don't know.
Let's say you're a Pinot Noir lover. That's a light red wine.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you buy a Cabernet. That's a heavy red wine, and you spend a lot of money on it. It's going to be even heavier, even stronger, even more like itself. So if you're buying the wrong wine that's not to your taste, and you spend a lot of money, you're making that wine more and more wrong for you.
Yeah.
Is that making any sense?
Tasted like syrup.
It's
not your flavor profile.
It was not flavor profile.
Exactly. You would have been better telling him what you like to drink.
I would have been better.
Yeah.
And I don't have a flavor profile.
So
in general,
I want to challenge your assertion, which everyone asserts that they do not know anything about wine. I believe that you know much more about wine than you think you do, and like all of us, are intimidated by, you know, the cult of experthood.
Yeah.
And that in order to say, hey, this is what I like. Hey, I want another glass. I want something different. People feel like you have to have a PhD in wine to be able to do that.
Okay, Jonathan Alsop, we only have a couple of minutes left here.
Okay.
Actually, like a minute and a half. So give your advice to people that are going to a barbecue and want to not, you know, have the best wines in the world, but just want to be presentable when they show up at their friend's house. Besides the Dragon Star Riesling and
You know, wear a tux, first of all.
You want to be cool. Okay.
And I'll tell you, we had, and I know that people are not going to believe this, but the next big thing is good wine in a box.
Yeah, that's
okay?
Right.
Good wine in a box. I just want to really recommend the Big House. Big House
Writing
lines.
That down.
There's Big House Red, Big House White, Big House Pinot Grigio, Big House, Wicked. I think they call it Wicked Old Vines Zinfandel.
Pretty good.
It's
Zinfandel's
great. It's very good. It's wine that you can also buy in a bottle, and it's that level of quality wine, except it's in a box. It's not a box shaped box.
Why would
you
want
it's like
an octagonal
box.
It's a picnic.
Box.
It's light.
Well,
carefree.
First of all, it's two bottles in a box. And it's easy to transport. You can keep it cool. You can chill it down and, you know, toss it in the car.
Okay.
You can take the bag out of the box and tape it onto your torso if you're going to sneak and run a little tube up through your shirt. I'm not that... I mean, these are just stories I've heard.
I'm not sure it's really possible
to do.
Okay.
But it's just extremely flexible delivery system, and it keeps the wine fresh because it's like the Playtex baby bottle. You know, it's a bag that's collapsing, so you're not bubbling any air back in it.
Okay.
So it doesn't go bad. It stays fresh longer.
And people can also go to and visit you at the Boston Wine School and learn all about wines.
Boston Wine School. Yeah, bostonwineschool.com.
I'm set. I've got my Dragonstone Riesling. I'm all set with that. And my Wicked Old Vines. What's it called? The Big House?
Big House. Yeah.
The Big House.
Big House Wines.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jonathan Alsop is the owner of the Boston Wine School, and he was very gracious to talk to myself, who knows nothing, and Callie, who knows everything apparently. Over there about the best wines for 4th of July. Thank you very much, Jonathan, for being with us.
Thank you, ladies.
And just so you know, we'll post a full list of Jonathan's recommendations at our website, wgbhnews.org/BPR. This is BPR, of course. I am Marjorie Egan. Jim Browdy's going to be back on Monday. Callie Crossley has graciously helped me out today. You can hear her every Sunday night at 6:30 on Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. Thank you very much for listening to Boston Public Radio. We'll be back tomorrow at noon.